Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
I'm going to conclude our lesson today dealing with the end of Solomon's life and the beginning of the reign of his son Rehoboam. There's real tragedy here, tragedy of peer group pressure, a tragedy of Solomon not being the kind of father he should have been. And yet there is the prophetic prediction of God in control. All of that is in today's lesson. So I hope you'll turn me into 1 Kings chapter 11, beginning in verse 26. We could have started earlier back in 14 with a list of the other adversaries of Solomon, which would have been Hadad, the Edomite, in verse 14 through 22, and then Rezin in verse 23 through 25, and then finally in verse 26, we come to Jeroboam. Now, I think it's helpful because there's going to be another Jeroboam later on during the reigns of Hosea and Isaiah. And they're confusing sometimes because the Bible doesn't say Jeroboam the first or Jeroboam the second. So I think you ought to put Jeroboam the first in your Bible here in this chapter, because we're talking about the Ephraimic labor leader who's going to lead the northern 10 tribes away from the rule of the Davidic king. Okay? Let's look at it if we could. Then Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Now, the word Jeroboam means enlarger. Okay? Son of Nebat, an Ephraimite. Now, Ephraim is one of the larger tribes. Ephraim was one of the children of Joseph. And here we see a picture of Joseph and his two kids. Jacob is going to bless them and give them equal inheritance rights. Joseph was a godly man. And his children are going to be very significant in the life of Israel. Matter of fact, the largest geographical land holdings go to Ephraim and Manasseh. The rival of the tribe of Judah is going to be the tribe of Ephraim. We'll see that some a little bit later, okay? Now, notice it said, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zerah, a widow, rebelled against the king. Now, this was the reason why he rebelled against the king. Solomon built the Milo and closed up the breach of the city of his father David. Now, I've got a graphic on the Milo I want to show you. Notice, if you will, that the word Milo means to fill. Now, apparently it refers to some kind of earthen work, a defense work for the city of Jerusalem. David built a Milo. You see it in 2 Samuel 5:9, 1 Chronicles 11:8. Now, Solomon built a Milo. You see it in chapter 11, verse 27. The real purpose of this being here is to show Solomon's forced labor practices, because that's what's going to cause all the problem with the people and Rehoboam. Solomon patterned his palace on a lavish eastern monarch. And the people were just burdened down with taxes to keep that palace going. Lots of animals for their food, lots of wine for their banquets. Military equipment had to be purchased. Troops were stationed everywhere. And what really got their goat is this forced labor. Solomon built a lot of his building projects with this forced labor. Now, let's see. Now, the man Jeroboam I was a valiant warrior, and when Solomon saw that the young man was industrious, he appointed him over the forced labor of the house of Joseph. Now, you might want to go back to chapter 5, verses 13 through 18, where it talks about the forced labor. There was a very good foreman-type man, and he was over the tribal allocation of Ephraim. Now, Ephraim is just north of Judah. And there's been a lot of controversy between these two tribes. Let me just give you an idea here. The blessings of Joseph in Genesis 49, 22 through 26, and in Deuteronomy 33, 13 through 17, reflect the power of the tribe of Ephraim. Also, the central location and fertility of Ephraim always made it a real rival to Judah. Finally, there were some tremendous leaders. Deborah, Joshua, Gideon, Abimelech, Samuel were all Ephraimite from the tribe of Ephraim. And finally, in Ephraim was the location of Shiloh, a very significant worship site, Bethel, right in that same area. So it had some very powerful associations with leaders, promises, and holy sites. And so it was a real rival. Now, notice, if you would, where it mentions here that a prophet is going to come. So it came about the time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that a prophet, Ahijah, the Shilohite, and of course that means from Shiloh, is going to meet him, found him on the road. He had a new cloak with him. He's going to tear that cloak into 12 pieces, verse 30. And here you see a slide of that. It's a beautiful picture. Now, he's going to tear it to 12 parts to show the division of the kingdom that's going to occur in the near future. And he said to Jeroboam, take for yourself 10 pieces. Now, I want to stop for a moment, and I want to show you a map, and I want us to talk through it. If you'll notice in verses 31 and 32, it mentions the 10 tribes, the northern 10 tribes, and the one tribe, Judah, in verse 32. Well, if you add 10 and 1, you only get 11. Now, we need to do a little redividing, and the map you see shows the division of the promised land under Joshua of the tribes. Notice that Simeon and Benjamin are both assimilated into Judah, okay? Now, the northern 10 tribes include the tribe of Levi and the two half-tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, and so really there is 13 tribes, okay? And we've just got them divided up different into 10 tribes and Judah, which is Simeon, Benjamin, and Judah. Okay, that's confusing, I know. Matter of fact, the Septuagint even has the word two in verse 32. It says, but he will have two tribes for the sake of my servant David. Now, of course, this great promise goes back to 2 Samuel chapter 7, where God promises a tremendous posterity and messianic fulfillment to David and his seed. And because God promised that, he's going to hang with Solomon's descendant, even though the young boy is so foolish, so very foolish. But the promise of the Davidic Messiah will come through him. Now, for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen for all the tribes of Israel. Now, you ought to go back, because this is a Deuteronomic phrase, where God chose Israel over Gilgal, over Shiloh, over Bethel, over the other holy sites, that his name should dwell, meaning the site of the temple. You ought to see Deuteronomy 12, 5, 11, and 18. I think that's a very beautiful thing. Now, in verse 33 is a mention of some of the gods we talked about last time. We have mentioned Ashtaroth, and she, of course, is the main female consort of the Tyranian fertility god Baal. The Canaanite pantheon is somewhat not clear. We only have one source outside the Bible, and that's Ugaritic text. So we're not really clear. But what we do know, Baal is the chief god. Baal is the weather god, the fertility god, that kind of thing. Anath, or Ashtaroth, is his female consort. Okay? Now, Chemosh is the war god of Moab. All right? And then we have Milcom, who is the war god of Ammon. Molech is not mentioned here, just these three main gods. And Israel apparently went after them. She was not content with Yahweh alone, but she went after these other gods. Verse 34, nevertheless, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand. I will make him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David, whom I chose, who observed my commandments and my statutes. Now, here is a great place to talk about the problem of predestination and free will. I've done a tape on that I have really tried to explore the interrelationship biblically of these two terms. God chose David.